You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Shaka Hislop in the studio. What a day once again. Later on in the show, I'll be reflecting with Nicky, Jurgen and Gab on that incredible win for Milan, thrashing Juventus by 3-0, and what that means for the top four race in Serie A. We start off, though, at the top of the tree in La Liga. What a match between Real Madrid and Sevilla. Real Madrid 2-1 down going into the 94th minute, but Toni Kroos' deflected effort in the end, meaning it finished Real Madrid 2, Sevilla 2, meaning it's as you were at the top of the table, of course, after Barcelona's 0-0 draw with Atleti on Saturday. Ali, you've been following, of course, La Liga. and you know, I was set up. Jules is with us as well. Ali, I was set up to say, well, is that it? Is Real Madrid out of it? But no. How crucial could that late goal prove to be in this title race?
And you know what? There's an argument to be made that deflection is actually from Eden Hazard.
Oh,
it may just
that doesn't
be an
follow
Eden
the
Hazard
narrative.
Deflection. I'm just letting you know that it may just be from Eden Hazard. Regardless, this title race, it reminds me of that final scene in Rocky II, where Apollo Creed and Rocky, they hit each other and they both fall to the ground, right? And it's like they're struggling to get up. And the team that barely hangs onto that rope and brings itself up, that's the team that's going to win it. That's how this title is going to be decided. Because even as I sit here and I say, well, now, as I told you yesterday, Real Madrid would lose points against Sevilla, and so therefore I have no choice but to pick Atletico Madrid. And then they play Real Sociedad in the midweek coming up. So what does that tell me? They're going to drop points then, and then somebody else is going to have an opportunity. Right now, it's so incredibly difficult. And when I say right now, I really mean for the last couple of months, to trust any of these three teams that are involved. And you may think, well, Barcelona must be out of it, because that big goal that we just saw there from whether it was in Hazard or the deflection from Diego Carlos, that is the goal that keeps Real Madrid ahead of Barcelona and the tiebreaker. Had Real Madrid lost today, now Barcelona would be the only one that was really close to Atletico Madrid. Now Barcelona is back to third, Real Madrid second. They seem to be the closest one, but still, that means that Atletico Madrid is going to have to drop some points. And do we trust for Atletico Madrid to run the table? No, we don't. This is not over. Not over for Atletico Madrid, not over for Real Madrid, and somehow not over for Barcelona either.
Ali's using Rocky 2 references. Jules, I'm almost going. I grew up watching WWE. The Undertaker's down. He's in the coffin. He's out of it. And all of a sudden, Paul Bearer lifts the urn. He jumps back out the coffin. Yokozuna's down. It's theatrical, isn't it? It really is kind of Hollywood stuff, because you could not write this.
You're right, and it's theatrical and it's Hollywood, but it's not written in advance. That's the big difference. And what we've been saying all season, there will be more twists. Don't worry. Don't take it for granted. Don't take the table for granted. There'll be more twists. They will drop points. Just think about the luck, really, that Atletico have had the last two games. Fidel's penalty for Elche that hit the post at the last minute. Then what happened this weekend at the Real Madrid-Sevilla game, but also in their own game against Barcelona. And you just think, wow, surely that's the luck of the champion. But again, like Ali said, you can't trust them to play against Real Sociedad and go and win and then win the remaining three games this season. But I'm not sure I trust the others either. So it's just going to be fascinating. I guess he's the one who will hold the nerves the longest and the best that will end up winning this La Liga title.
Very much the pantomime villain then, if you like, in this whole script has been Eden Hazard, Jules, after what happened at Stamford Bridge. Didn't start today.
No, he didn't start, and we discussed it the other night with Sid Lowe as well. He could have started and played a key part and then almost redeemed himself for that scene with Kurt Zouma at the end of the Chelsea tie. Zidane, I guess, decided that because he'd been so much in the eye of the storm that it was probably better for everybody that he didn't start. And then, like Ali said, he might be credited with the goal that gets that point that might win them the title further down the line, so that might change a bit the narrative, but Maybe Zidane was right. It was a tough game for Eden to start.
Ali.
Please. Please. Just 1 week and off. Please.
Alejandro Moreno, okay, who wins La Liga?
Well, I'm going to go full circle. And I'm going to come right back around too. Hey, Atletico Madrid. Hey,
Wow.
Yay. Somehow, after a two-month-long slide at the back of a collab that they have survived, we're here, three games to go, and they have it in their hands. Atletico Madrid, based upon the first half that they played against Barcelona. If they play with that sort of confidence and that positive attitude and that sense of belief, I'm going to say Atletico Madrid. Although, I'm not very confident, and I'm sure that we'll be having this conversation once again come the midweek when they lose points to Real Sociedad.
Jules.
Atletico Madrid, I said it on Friday night, I say again tonight, I just think that they've got that luck of the champions that slightly apart from that Real Sociedad game, I know it's one out of three, but you could say that the rest of the games after that is probably slightly easier than Real Madrid, for example, who will have to play Villarreal on the last game of the season. And I just think Atletico will just grind it out.
Shaka.
Barcelona.
This is where you have to give me a reason.
Huh? Well, you didn't tell me that before. I just feel...
Here we go. Get ready for this, boys.
You're finished with two home games. I think that gives Barcelona all the edge they need right now.
Really?
That's as good as you're getting, Dan.
Yep. Home games in front of an empty stadium.
That's as good as you're getting right now, Dan.
Right, that's all it is. Wow, thank you very much. As Ali mentioned, of course, midweek matches will go a long way to the final. Maybe not, in fact. Who will win the title this season? It's Barcelona, who have the opening game away against Levante. Then on Wednesday, Sevilla, Valencia. Atletico Madrid taking on Real Sociedad. And then on Thursday, it's Granada against Real Madrid.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
In the big game in Italy, finished Milan 3, Juventus 0. I can't tell you how bad Juventus were throughout this game. Milan thoroughly deserving of the victory. Diaz, Rebic and Tomori getting the goals. Key goal, that third one for Tomori, because it means it's not goal difference in Italy, remember. It's head-to-head. It means Milan and then ahead of Juventus if they tie on points come the end of the season, which is certainly very feasible when you take a look at the table. We saw victories as well this weekend, but Atalanta and Napoli, so it's Juventus who sit fifth in the Serie A table. So much to discuss as we welcome in Jürgen Klinsmann, Gab Marcotti and Nicky Bandini. Jürgen, I got to start with you. Juventus.
Well, we hope for an entertaining second half, and I think we got a very entertaining second half. I mean, I thought then after Cassie missed the penalty, okay, Juve will come back and tie it up. But obviously a beautiful goal by Rebic and then Tomori, you know, finish things up for AC Milan. A well-deserved win by AC Milan. Tactically, very well executed by all of them. You know, they didn't give them any chances. I think, you know, Juventus maybe in the second half had in the beginning of the second half, one chance. Even Cristiano Ronaldo had a half chance. Cristiano never got into the game, unfortunately for Juve. Dybala came on too late, far too late into the game to make any kind of a difference. So this is a huge, huge win for AC Milan. Obviously, it's a six-pointer, yeah. And it puts them in the driver's seat now for the next remaining three games. But it was highly entertaining second half. Very enjoyable.
Yeah, unless you're a Juventus supporter, Gab. I think before the game, nobody thought that Milan were going to get 3 points from this one. But they thoroughly deserved it.
Yeah, I mean, I read a stat. I haven't checked it myself, so don't shout at me if it's wrong. But that Milan had never won in 9 trips to Juventus' stadium, certainly in Serie A since it opened. So, you know, I don't think anybody saw this coming. You know, I think a draw is what a lot of people had. And what I most of all didn't see is such a limp performance from Juventus. And yeah. Look, we can go and dump this all on Pirlo, and you know I've been sticking up for him, but you need to send your guys onto the pitch with the right mindset. And it didn't look to me like they had the right mindset at all. Forget the tactics, the 4-4-2, forget Rabiot and Bentancur and all this other stuff. It's just the way you step onto the pitch. To me, they did not look prepared, and it's not the first time this has happened this season.
What really struck me, Nicky, is once Kessie had that penalty saved, you thought, right, this is going to be the catalyst. This is going to be the spark, the kick up the backside that Juventus need. But it never materialized.
No, it didn't at all. And I mean, I agree with Gab that you can sort of throw out tactics to a certain extent and say, look, it's about having the right attitude. And Juventus haven't had that for a long time. But gosh, in the second half of that game, when you were looking at what Juventus were trying to do, it was exactly what Pirlo talked about on day one at the beginning of the season, splitting the attack into 5 parts. Actually, everyone's focused on the 4-4-2, but when his thesis came out, when he was talking to the press, this whole conversation was around Pirlolandia, like it was a theme park. We were going to have 5 sections to the attack and attacking from all different angles. And when you watched it in that second half, it's exactly what they were trying to do, but there was no energy to it, no excitement. And Milan, as you can see here, just absolutely took them apart. Beautiful goal from Ante Rabic, no pressure on him whatsoever. And what a moment for Fikayo Tomori as well. I think he's been actually sort of had a rough couple of weeks. The last few weeks after he stepped into the team initially and was brilliant, he has had some mistakes, he has had some missteps, but He has been brilliant overall. And for him to get that goal that, as you guys just talked about, not only seals a historic win for Milan, I mean, gosh, this is a humiliation to end all humiliations for Juventus, but also gives them this huge leg up in the top 4 race.
Gab, is there any chance that Pirlo won't be in charge of Juventus for their clash against Sassuolo on Wednesday?
I did look. There's always a chance, right? Again, we're gonna hear what they say after the game. I wouldn't expect it. You would have to believe that the relations between the team are broken, and bringing somebody else in is gonna give you an instant result. I don't know that that's the case. I don't think Juve match up well against Sassuolo simply in terms of playing styles at all. But look, at this stage, you know, I don't see how you're suddenly going to expect things to change. You know what you have to do. You know you play Inter on the last day of the season. There is a big rivalry there, as Jürgen keeps reminding us. But equally, Inter are already champions. You just have to believe, look, let's win our 9 games and others will drop points along the way. Milan play Atalanta the last game of the season. Milan have to play Torino, who are fighting to avoid relegation. You know, it's not going to be a cakewalk for the others. Napoli are just 1 point clear. I think at this stage, that's what you have to believe rather than, you know, some emergency replacement who's going to put everybody back behind the ball and just lump the ball to Cristiano, which I think is probably what would happen if you brought in somebody new at this stage.
What would you do, Nikki?
Gosh, I don't know exactly, as Gab says, what you can change in the amount of time you have left this season. I think the situation you've put yourself in right from the beginning of this campaign, it was obvious that it was a huge gamble. I mean, I just called this a historic humiliation. Bear in mind the Juventus early in this campaign, they dropped points to Crotone, who have finished last by a very long way. They've actually taken only 1 point from two games of Benevento. This hasn't snuck up like some big surprise. Anyone who has been watching Juventus for weeks and months has seen that Pirlo, it's not a personal judgment on him. He just doesn't have this situation in hand. And I think to make a change now with three games left, fine, maybe you'll get some sort of bounce, but it's closing the door after the horse has bolted for me.
Jürgen, on the sidelines, if you're Pirlo and you're watching that sort of performance, it must be so frustrating as a coach knowing what is on the line.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, this is the most kind of difficult thing when you are a coach and you have basically no influence anymore when you watch that, especially the last 15 minutes, you know, and it's going down the drain there. So all you can do now is really just take it one day at a time and obviously have a lot of talks with the players, you know, try to fix whatever is needed to get fixed and focus on these remaining three games, you know, try to kind of put it in the head of the players that there are 9 points to be played for. And go for those 9 points, you know, be positive, be not worried about your own situation, because obviously now the Italian media, you can only imagine it, they will be all over Andrea Pirlo and Juventus, you know, and the whole situation there. So all the Andrea Pirlo can do is really just kind of zoom in and be as close as you can to the players, you know, try to fix what needs to get fixed and just prepare them the best way possible for every individual game just remaining. They're still there. I mean, they still can make it in a top four. It's going to be difficult, but that's the situation that he's in. And I mean, he has been in difficult situations throughout his career as well, so he will manage it somehow.
You take a look at the run-in for Juventus, Sassuolo away, as I mentioned, on Wednesday. Then it's up against the Inter already crowned champions, Bologna, in the final day of the season. What a final day that is going to be. Gab, if we're sat here after that Bologna game, Juventus are fifth, what happens with Cristiano Ronaldo?
I think he's going to have some thinking to do. He's going to have some thinking to do because he will have 1 year left on his contract. And I know some people believe that he's, you know, some kind of android that will play on forever. And maybe he will. But the reality is the clock is ticking and he wants the Champions League. You know, last week he was linked to a return to Portugal, to Sporting Lisbon, which would be a wonderful romantic story. And Champions League football as well. He's going to have to evaluate it. I think, you know, there the conversation with Juve comes because, look, they're going to take an enormous financial hit if they don't finish in the top four. They're already struggling there. You know, if he says, guys, should we just cancel the last year of my contract? I go wherever I want on a free. I sign for whatever I want. And you guys go and, you know, save yourself close to $75 million a year.
Wow.
What would Juve say to that? Would they be okay with that? You know, I think they should seriously consider it. If Cristiano says, guys, hope you understand, but this is not what I signed up for. And I think maybe you find a silver lining in that.
Jürgen, what would you do if you're Cristiano Ronaldo and facing the Europa League next season with Juventus?
Well, I think a lot depends on his personal relationship with his teammates and how he feels, you know, in life in Torino, life, you know, there, you know, on a daily base. You know, it's also a family situation there. You cannot always just make every decision dependable on, okay, if it's Europa League or Champions League, you know. I mean, obviously, the financial situation is a completely different discussion to have for Juventus now that the Super League have failed completely and all that stuff. I mean, there are so many other pieces floating around. But if you are Cristiano Ronaldo, you got to zoom in and say, okay, what is really now important to me in terms of the playing side, you know, and I personally hope he stays there, even if they would go into the Europa League and continues his job there.
Let's just take a look at that schedule then. Once again, the remaining matches for Atalanta, a nice win against Parma earlier today. Puts them in a very nice position, doesn't it? 72 points at the moment. Benevento, Genoa, and then AC Milan on the final day of the season. For Milan, obviously, Atalanta then on the final day. Cagliari and Torino coming up midweek. Napoli, with that win yesterday, puts them in a nice position. Udinese, Fiorentina, and Verona for Juventus, Sassuolo, Inter, and Bologna. Nicky, who can I pen in? Can I pen in Atalanta?
I think I am most confident of Atalanta because of how well they're playing, being honest with you. But they are playing against some teams there who can take points off them. Benevento, sure, other end of the table, but they're fighting to avoid relegation, so that's a team with plenty of incentive. And then they have a head-to-head with Milan. So it's not written down for certain that Atalanta get in. I think they will, but I don't feel, as I said at the beginning of the show, I don't feel like this weekend was going to exclude anyone definitely. I think this weekend has wound up giving a huge, huge step in the right direction for Milan. But I really don't think any of these teams is guaranteed in yet, except the one that literally is, which is Inter.
Gab, why were you shaking your head when I said I could pen in Atalanta? Why don't you like them?
Well, because, look, it's rule number one in Italian football. Jurgen knows this, is that the teams, well, not just in Italy, in fact, anywhere, the teams you want to play at the end of the season are the teams that are on the beach, that have nothing to play for. The teams you do not want to play are the ones that are fighting to scrap and avoid relegation. And, you know, this game against Benevento coming up, you can say, ha-ha, it's only Benevento. But, you know, you saw the tantrum the owner pulled today. They're going to go out there all guns blazing. It's going to be a tough game. Milan in the last day of the season, you know, there is a scenario where Atalanta, I'm not saying they're going to lose to Benevento, but if Atalanta draw that game and then lose to Milan on the last day of the season, they're only going to get another 4 points. And it's basic math that if Juve win their last three games, they're going to get 9 points and they're going to finish ahead of Atalanta and possibly Atalanta miss out. That is how tight it is. Oh. I don't think there's much that we can take for granted here. Or even if Atalanta draw with Milan on the last day of the season, they could finish behind Juventus if Juventus win their three games, which tonight's performance, I grant you. But, you know, that's what you have to look for. You have to look for teams that have something to play for. I feel much more confident, you know, playing teams like Verona or Bologna at this stage of the season.
Right, so Gab, who have you got? If I ask you for your top four now, who isn't making it?
Having said all that,
I
think it comes down. Look, Juventus have major issues that they need to solve out. And I think I think this Sassuolo game, because it's Sassuolo, because of the way Sassuolo play, I think it will go anywhere. I think their whole season really hinges right there. So as of right now, I'm going to leave Juventus in, and I'm going to suggest that maybe it's Atalanta who screw up for the reason I said, because of that Milan-Atalanta game at the end and this Benevento game in midweek. But I don't know. I mean, Napoli against Fiorentina, for example, that Fiorentina, our team, yeah, they're going to be safe and everything, but that is exactly the kind of game that Napoli might screw up.
Wait, you just said you want to be playing teams that are on the beach, and they're on the beach.
You do, but there is so much that's into motivation and things that are going on right now. Napoli, I think, are capable of a misstep because of the zoo that is upstairs. You know, right now you have a situation where club presidents decided, well, and the team have decided, okay, we're not speaking to the media at all. Oh. Why? Because they know that if they open their mouths, they could say something that, you know, yeah, they have a media blackout going on. So, you know, it's not a settled situation there either. So I think there's going to be more twists and turns. And look, Nikki, she's entirely right when she says, you know, today wasn't going to be decisive. This is going to keep going and going, I think, right down to the last week of the season. And I think Milan against Atalanta could well end up being, you know, a play-in or Champions League decider, just like Inter against Juve, just like Napoli against whoever they're playing.
Nikki, who's missing out?
Honestly, I feel so reactive because at the beginning of this evening, I said I predicted Juventus to win this game. But I think this really just brought home tonight what and mess their players. It's not that you lose, and it's not even that you lose 3-0. It's the complete absence of structure to everything that's happening on the pitch. And it's exactly what happened against Udinese. And as I said, in that game, what saved them was Ronaldo, which is why, and I saw Gav shaking his head when I said this at halftime, you've just got to get him the ball. It's not that I think that's some great plan. It's that I think the mess is that deep now that you're not going to fix it at half time in the middle of the biggest game of the season. And I don't think you're going to fix it in the 3 days till your next game either. You've got no time to resolve everything that's wrong with this team right now. So yes, right now, I think Juventus will be the team to miss out. Having said that, I did also say a second ago, I think it will go to the wire. And I really do think any of these teams could stuff it up. Even Napoli, who have the easiest games on paper, and for the reasons that Gab said, they're playing against teams that aren't in the running. Fiorentina are a great example of a team that maybe collectively aren't in the running, but Vlahovic just on his own is on some sort of personal mission at the moment, proving himself and putting himself on show, as they would say in Italy. And I think little things like that can end up having a huge impact when you're down to the wire like this.
Come on, Jürgen, make Gab shake his head some more. Who's missing out?
Well, I mean, that's all what we wanted. No, we wanted a race until the very last, you know, whistle. And it's going to be very, very tight. And it's going to be a drama, a real drama. Who gets those spots in the Champions League in Italy? I mean, for me personally, I really enjoy it because Inter can kick out Juventus, possibly, of the Champions League. So I'm going to tell everybody I can, and I find in Milano not to go on the beach, and not to take it easy, and get the job done. And I'm pretty sure that they are highly motivated for this last game with Juventus. But again, you know, anything is still possible for all of those teams, and that's so fascinating from us, from the outside looking at it. It's going to be very, very exciting the next 2 weeks.
What do you think, Shaq?
I think Napoli miss out for some strange reason. I just feel, despite
to that analysis.
I'll tell you why I even surprised myself in saying that is, Gab's absolutely right. You want to be playing teams in mid-table. I just feel that Napoli, maybe a certain sense of self-questioning comes in those remaining three games, while the others are challenged week in, week out, and have to respond. If you just find yourself in a little zone of complacency, that may come back to bite you. And as much as, yes, you prefer to be playing against teams in mid-table than teams at the bottom are there for a reason, because they aren't very good. So there is that potential. There is that potential against mid-table teams for an upset, and I think that's where they come.
Just a reminder then, a full programme of matches midweek, taking you through what's happening on Tuesday, is Napoli against Udinese, looking to set the marker down early. And on Wednesday, Atalanta against Benevento. You've got Juve away against Sassuolo and Milan away against Torino. And then on Thursday, Crotone against Verona. Meanwhile, for Inter, loving life at the moment. Of course, this is their first game as champions as they destructed Sampdoria yesterday. Nicky, I suppose after we mocked you a couple of seasons ago when you said Napoli were going to win the league and got that so wrong, to be fair, at the start of this season, you said Inter would, and that's exactly what transpired.
Yeah, and look, I thought they could win it. I didn't think they would win it this comfortably. This game against Sampdoria, it's funny because for so long recently they've been winning 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, and it felt like that was the only speed they had right now under Antonio Conte. But as soon as they got that pressure off, they no longer had that weight of the title on them. It was just a completely different type of game, different players as well. Look, I think it's just been such a impressive Antonio Conte style of win, the way they've got to the line. It has been so relentless, so absolutely inevitable, the way it's felt since the midpoint of the season, where they've dropped, what, 4 points since the start of this year, basically, maybe just a tiny bit into January, the last 19 games or so. And it's just felt inevitable. And yes, that's partly down to the other teams that have dropped away. But I think whatever else anyone else has done, when you go on a run like this, where you just don't lose at all, you have to put your hands up and say that's a very, very worthy team of champions.
You can use this moment to tell Gab that you told him so, if you like.
I did tell Tully. So I told, yes. I don't know if Gab was actually one of the people who disagreed with me at the start of the season. It was in this studio, though, I was mocked for picking Inter, and apparently I picked them every year, which I did not. But this year I was right.
Gab picked Napoli. We'll just bring that up, shall we, Gab?
Did you?
You say they're not even going to qualify for the Champions League now.
I think Napoli, look, give me Victor Osimhen all season long, and let's go and have, you know, there's an alternate timeline here where Victor Osimhen doesn't get hurt, and where Aurelio De Laurentiis, you know, doesn't tantrum and act like Aurelio De Laurentiis, and that is a timeline where Napoli win the title this season.
Yeah, but you knew that was going to happen anyway.
Probably not, but still.
Thank you very much, guys. Just a reminder, Coppa Italia final will be live on ESPN2. That's a week Wednesday. Atalanta taking on Juventus. That is at 2:30 Eastern. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Let's take a look, meanwhile, what happened in the Premier League today. Manchester United can still mathematically catch Manchester City at the top of the table after beating Aston Villa by 3-1. Meanwhile, West Ham really have it all to do now, don't they, if they're going to qualify for the Champions League. Just 3 matches remaining after losing 1-0 at home against Everton. Meanwhile, West Brom are relegated after Arsenal beat them by 3-1. Stevie and Jules with us. Stevie, let's start, shall we, Manchester United against Villa. What should we say about this?
Just the usual. Manchester United let the opposition go ahead, then come back and win the game. I've seen it 1,000 times before, particularly this season. So it was just a kind of normal game for Manchester United away from home in the Premier League.
Jules, what would you add to that?
I would add 25 games in a row away from home without defeat in the Premier League, which is astonishing if you think about it. The record is obviously 27 from Arsenal under Arsene Wenger, and they're getting closer and they have so much confidence going away from home. Even when they fall behind like we saw today, they won 31 points this season from losing position. 31 points is a lot, and for me, and I've said it on the show with Gab, it's a lot down to their fitness. Their fitness level is just extraordinary. The work that Solskjaer and his coaching staff and his fitness coaches have done is fantastic. They are so fit, even when they've played on Thursday night like they did at Roma with, you know, quite a lot of the players who were there on Thursday who started today, and yet they're still by far the fittest team in the second half. I find that incredible and well done to them.
Obviously, Steve, this is the start of, what's it, 4 matches in 3 days or something that United are playing. They've got Leicester. I know, producer, really. I didn't mean that. In a couple of days, obviously, they're playing Leicester. Before that, then they take on Liverpool, Stevie. So is there suggestions that they will make a lot of changes against Leicester, and that will obviously advance their top 4 hopes before putting out a stronger team against Liverpool?
I don't think that's how he should go about it. Listen, he's got 5 games in 15 days, something crazy like that, and the last one being the Europa League final. The way I would do it is you win the game against Leicester, and that's you second place. It would take a miracle if they get 3 points against Leicester for Chelsea to go past them, both in points and goal difference. And so for me, that should be what he should be thinking about. Not thinking about Liverpool. You know, if he's letting his heart rule his head, then he's doing a disservice to Manchester United. Listen, you go, you win the game against Leicester, and if you get the 3 points, then your focus has to be not the remaining Premier League games, but how do I get my team and how do I keep everybody fit and try and get them fresh for the Europa League Cup final. That's how he should be thinking, not I'll rest a few against Leicester so that we can beat Liverpool. That's not doing a good job if that's how he's thinking.
But maybe he's thinking, I'm going to rest some players, Stevie, because they've just played a game. And so we need to give them time to rest up ahead of another game. Leicester comes too soon and therefore Liverpool comes as a natural fit.
But then that's my point is you can't. My point is, go and win that game, and it's done. Then you can rest.
But then how many players are going to get injured? How many are going to pull muscles? Why can't you rest them?
Oh, but if this happened...
No, but it's not ifs, is it, Steve? We know that if you're playing games consistently too much,
then you have to play your three games in 4 days.
I don't think it's got anything to do with the fact it was Liverpool. I think even if it was the other way around, I don't think...
Let me tell you what I would do. I play the first team against Leicester. I win the game. I play the reserves against Liverpool. I play the first team against Fulham. I play the reserves against Wolves, and I play the first team against and the Europa League final against Villarreal. That's what I do, because that means that from the game against Leicester, the first team are getting a whole week off before they play.
But they're still tired from beating Aston Villa.
Considering how fit they are, as Jules is saying, that's the way to do it.
Aren't they tired from the Villa game?
Don't be ruled by your heart. Be ruled by your head.
I don't think... How is he being ruled by his heart, Stevie?
Because if he wants to win the Liverpool game more than anything, that's not doing his job properly.
But I don't think there's any suggestion that that's it. That's the reason, isn't it? Isn't it all down to fitness? Isn't it all down to trying to keep his players as fit as possible?
I'm just telling you what I would do, Dan.
Right, OK.
I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm telling you what I would do. That's what I would do. I don't think you can ever pick and choose when you're going to win a game. I think you, particularly right now, you've got the chance to solidify second and concentrate on the Europa League final. That's what I would do.
Jules?
Yeah, I hear what Stevie is saying, and I think he's got a point about second place, of course, and they've been used to play every 3 days. This one is in 2 days, so... might be different. I think you can take it case by case, and they've got all sorts of data from the GPS that the players are wearing, and you would know who feels tired, who is tired, who maybe has run less, who has run a lot, who has little niggles maybe. We saw Harry Maguire coming off today after 72 minutes. He'd played every single minute of every Premier League match since he joined the club from Leicester, almost three years ago. And now, suddenly, he will sit out the Leicester game and then be ready for the Liverpool game if it's not too serious, the injury. But I think, case by case, you'll take it. Cavani was a sub today. He can easily start against Leicester and then starts against Liverpool again. You've got Martial coming back from his injury as well. You've got Donny van de Beek, who's on the... So you still have very good options on the bench if you want to shake it a little bit. You don't have to change all of it, all 11 of them. You can change 2, 3... maybe 4 for the Leicester game, and then they can all come back for the Liverpool game. I think they will do it case by case and see also with the players feeling. How do you feel? Do you really feel tired? Do you think you can play both Tuesday and Thursday? I think it will be more that kind of discussions. But Stevie is right as well. You win Leicester and you're certainly to be second, and then maybe you have a bit more insight for the next few games before the Villarreal one.
What do you think, Shaq?
I think the only game that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is thinking about right now is Villarreal. And rightly so, understandably so. And everything about what they do, what games they have, the data they get from their GPS monitors, etc., dictates his rotation policy to have the team in the best shape possible for Villarreal. Now, what that means as far as the Leicester game or the Liverpool games, almost pale in comparison. And right now, in all honesty, finishing second pales in comparison to beating Villarreal and lifting the Europa League title. That, for me, is, and rightly so, should be his only focus.
You want to hear more from Stevie, Jules and Shaq? Well, why not? You can check out Extra Time, which is always available over on our YouTube channel. It is the FA Cup final this weekend. Chelsea taking on Leicester. It's a game that is live on ESPN+. Be sure to tune in. Things kick off at 11 o'clock for our preview show. It should be a cracker. Well, the game should. The show will be fine.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Huge result in France. PSG can only manage a 1-1 draw against Rennes, meaning that Lille are 3 points clear with two games to go. Jules back with us, surely. Jules, Lille, big favourites now.
Yeah, they are done. I think they will win now. They play Saint-Etienne, who are 11th in the table with nothing to play for, really. And then they play Angers, who are 12th in the last game of the season. Again, have nothing to play for. And I think Lille have been so resilient all season. They've been so good collectively and individually with Burak Yılmaz especially, but others as well that have stepped up when needed, when the collective was maybe not as good as in other games. And I think that resilience will take them all the way now. Psychologically, tonight it's a huge weekend, huge day,
yeah.
Because Lille will have so much confidence and such a big boost by PSG dropping points. And for PSG, I think the head was probably still at the Etihad and they didn't play well. They probably didn't even deserve a draw tonight. So I think we can very soon congratulate Lille for what would be an incredible achievement to win this Ligue 1 title.
It's extraordinary, Jules. The fallout in Paris, let's start off with the obvious question. Is Pochettino going to be OK?
Yeah, he will be OK. I mean, I think the judgment will come once he has a full pre-season and he can start the season and have a full year, full campaign, where you can really judge on what he puts in place, his methods with the players and everything. Now it's been really hard for him since January because of injuries and COVID and games every 3 days, not time to prepare, not time to work on the things that he really wanted to work. You can say that beating Barcelona and Bayern Munich and for some of the tie against City, giving a good account of themselves was enough for him. Even if the league is not coming his way and PSG's way, it would be a big disappointment. They can still win the French Cup, which would be very little consolation, really. But I think he would be judged next season, not really this half of the season that he had after replacing Tuchel.
Just to put into context how much of a disaster this is for PSG, Jules.
It is a disappointment more than a disaster because of the Champions League semi-final and because this is the biggest competition for them, the Champions League, and because after the final last year, they did really well again going into the semi-final, losing against City in the way they did. There's no shame in it at all, as we've been saying on the show. So that really compensated by the fact that they've been poor this season in Ligue 1. Yes, Lille have been great, and so have been Monaco and Lyon to a certain extent. But this title is PSG lost it more than anybody else winning it, because they've lost already, what, 8 times in the league this season, which is probably as much as in the last 3 seasons combined altogether, which is really not acceptable. But there was circumstances to it, the change of managers, as we said, a very special season. I think the fact that we don't know what Kylian Mbappe is going to do next season has played a bit on the players' mind and on Pochettino too. The Neymar contract extension dragged on a bit as well. I don't think that was helpful. And then there was that great run in the Champions League, which I think took a lot of energy away from the league too. So you can maybe understand why they're not going to win it, but it's a huge disappointment and, in a way, quite a shame, really, for a club like that.
Well, a shame for you as a PSG fan. I think others would disagree.
And for me as well, too. You're right.
Neymar, of course, as you mentioned, putting pen to paper on a contract. We'll see him until 2025. You mentioned Mbappe. Where do we stand on that? Where do you think he will go, or will he stay?
It's the $1 million question, Dan. I mean, there's... And to do quick, and we've talked a lot about it, but he can extend the contract like PSG have offered him another 4-year deal with a huge pay rise that will take him around the similar money that Neymar is on. And we're talking around 35 million euros a year, which is a lot of money. He can not want to extend, but he also knows that no one can pay for him right now, not in transfer fee, not in those kind of wages either, not Real Madrid, not Liverpool. They don't have that kind of money unless they sell a lot of players, which is not going to be immediate, really. So he also knows that. The third option is to run down his contract. PSG won't be happy. They can't afford to let him go on a free in the summer 2022. But that might be better for Kylian, because he can have another year in Paris and try to win them the Champions League, which was always his objective. And then he will be able to decide where to go, because then a lot of clubs will be able to afford him. No transfer fee. You can give him a signing on fee and then the big wages, and that won't be a problem. So I think the discussions will continue. I feel that he will extend, but there will be some sort of agreement that he can go next summer, but just not for free.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So it's very much advantage Borussia Dortmund with just two matches remaining in Germany. Dortmund, of course, moving up to fourth after beating Leipzig by 3-2. In case you missed it, they were 2-0 up. Leipzig got it back to 2-2. Erling Haaland not featuring in the game because he was injured. He would be on the sideline and would watch the magic free from Jadon Sancho. Little 1-2 back into the Englishman. And then a key victory, and then hugs all round from Haaland and Sancho after the game. Bellingham there as well, who didn't feature either. But goodness me, Borussia Dortmund then with a big 3 points thanks to that late strike from Jadon Sancho. And it is now in Dortmund's hands, which hasn't been for a long time. If they beat Mainz and beat Bayer Leverkusen, then they will be in the Champions League next season. Jürgen is back with us. Jürgen, that was some game against Leipzig, because we've seen it so much from Dortmund this season, getting themselves into good positions and then throwing it away. But on this occasion, they just managed to find that all-important winning goal.
Yeah, and that winning goal is huge. It's huge. It's from a psychological point of view now, two games to go. It's big, but also towards the German Cup final on Thursday. It's really important, because they come now into that cup final with kind of being in a good moment, in a good spirit, with a good confidence level. And that could also make basically the chance a bit bigger to win that very prestigious cup in Germany. But then for the race in the Champions League, it means also a lot. I mean, it's not done yet. I mean, it's not easy to play. They're going to play Mainz, and Mainz is fighting the relegation battle. And that relegation battle at the moment in the German Bundesliga is super, super intense. I mean, what's going on down there on the bottom of the table is real drama. And that's what it's all about also. You know, the whole promotion relegation system that we often discuss here in the United States has so much value, has so much excitement. And so it's going to be exciting the next two games to see in the Bundesliga.
Dortmund should do it, though, shouldn't they, Jürgen?
They should do it, yeah. They should do it now, especially with this win, with that confidence they go now into the next, in the cup final and in the last two games. They should do it based on their qualities they have and the players they have. They seem to be very determined. They seem to have a good spirit in the group right now. They are focused. So, and I think also, you know, the coach Terzic, that, you know, has, we talked a lot about him, you know, coming in a new coach, you know, is he working under that new coach? He has a point to prove. I mean, if he wins the German Cup on Thursday and he gets them into the Champions League, then I'm pretty sure that there are some offers on the table for him from other teams.
Well, of course, that result for Dortmund meant that even before kickoff, Bayern Munich were champions of Germany. What I thought was quite telling, Jürgen, was the fact that they then went on, didn't need to, and beat Borussia Mönchengladbach by 6-0.
Yeah, and this is really the cool side of them, and they never relax. I mean, they have a fun. They obviously they have a huge party there, but when it's down to business, they do business, you know. And 6-0 kind of demolition of Borussia Mönchengladbach is just a statement. It's a statement that no matter what, you know, when we get on the field, we are serious about what we're doing. And obviously, there's Robert Lewandowski with the big, big goal to crack Gerd Müller's all-time scoring record in the Bundesliga with 40 goals. He's now one goal short of that record. The team wants to help him. The team wants to help him to crack this record, which is it's huge. I mean, it's an immense, because obviously Gerd Müller, for all of us Germans, is a legend. It's a huge legend. In the 70s, you know, won the World Cup, won European Championship, where he scored I don't know how many goals in the Bundesliga, the national team. We all admired him throughout his career. And if Robert Lewandowski is able to kind of to break that record, that is a big statement.
Jan, we had Jan on yesterday, who said that Lewandowski is the best striker since Marco van Basten. Would you agree with that?
Well, definitely in the moment right now, yeah, I agree with Jan, because, you know, he's just so focused. He's so kind of in sync with his teammates. You know, it's all kind of, it's just beautiful to watch, you know, how they kind of link up together. And he's a complete striker. And as Marco van Basten in his days was, you know, his left foot and right foot is strong in the air. He's a great combiner with his teammates there. He does execute set pieces, if it's a free kick or especially, you know, penalties. So in that way, yes, he's right now, as of today, the best striker in the world.
Jürgen Klinsmann, as always, thank you very much. As Jürgen mentioned, of course, it's the German Cup final this Thursday, and it is live on ESPN2, Leipzig against Dortmund, kickoff at 2:30 Eastern. Back in Italy, at the bottom of the table, Benevento lost 3-1 against Cagliari, a game shrouded in controversy. 2-1 to Cagliari. Benevento would be awarded a penalty. The referee then advised to go over to the monitor to check whether or not it was the right decision. He would change his mind. You look at the replays, you think, this looks like a clear penalty, but he changes his mind. Benevento go on to lose that game by 3-1. This is what people in Inzaghi had to say, the Benevento manager. The referee told me the contact was not too strong, but if he admits there was contact, VAR can't intervene. We don't want to be relegated like this. Some of the Benevento players were crying. They are feeling like they were robbed. Stronger words coming out from the president, Oreste Vigorito, saying, I have never talked about referees, but I received messages from Naples and others who told me they send referee Paolo Silvio Mazzolini as the VAR when they want to kill the centre-south clubs. We may as well remove VAR because it's just an extra excuse for their usual rubbish. We are losing a year of sacrifices and hard work while he sits with his butt on a bench watching TV and changing decisions. It is shameful. Gab, I think he may have thought the penalty should have stood.
He probably thought so, and there are a couple things here. First of all, I don't know if we want to get Mr. Vigorito a map, because if you look where Benevento is on a map and where Cagliari is on a map, Cagliari, the beneficiary, is here, you will note that Cagliari is south of Benevento. But leaving that to one side, he does have a point. It's not a good point. There's not a good reason, if you're a league, to give yourself an excuse by sending the same guy 2 weeks in a row to officiate for to be the VAR for the same team 2 weeks in a row. Because in Italy, sadly, we pay attention to all these details. What he's referring to about the VAR can't intervene, he can only intervene if the referee has established there is contact, is the interpretation we have of VAR in Italy, which is that VAR can intervene to establish whether there was contact. They can't establish the extent of the contact. In other words, it's not up to them to judge. Only the referee can judge that. But I think ultimately what he's ignoring here is the referee looked at it again and decided it wasn't a penalty. For me, it probably was a penalty, because even though Viola kind of looked for the contact was undeniably there and he fell theatrically and whatever. So you could have given the penalty. But ultimately, he's blaming the VAR for flagging up to the referee, but ultimately, this is why the referee goes and checks it. Referee has to own it, and he did. And in his opinion, it wasn't a penalty at first, and he sees it, looks it closer, and decides it's not a penalty.
I suppose to add fuel to that, Nicky, the VAR official has told him to go and have a look, so automatically the referee might want to start doubting himself because he has to go and look at a decision that he's already made.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to stress that Mazzolini doesn't make this decision, exactly as Gab just said. But of course, a referee in a very short space of time has to go and make that decision at the monitor. And if he's got someone in his ear saying, not sure about this, it could influence his decision. Look, I was surprised that they overturned it. To me, it looks like a penalty, but I think everything that Gab said is spot on. Basically, it's a bad look to send the same VAR official, but in the end, it's not the VAR official who's making that decision.
Penalty or not for you, Jürgen?
For me, it was a penalty because I think he got him with his knee, actually. And therefore, yeah, it's very, very unfortunate there for Benevento. But these are now, it's crunch time. Now, these are the last couple of games, and they really, really, really matter. And if this is now the situation why Benevento really goes down because of one or two points, then this is brutal. This is really brutal. So I understand all the emotions. I understand the frustration from Benevento's side. Now let's just go a couple of minutes further and we talk about Juve Milan, and we have the same situation now in Juve Milan today. Mm. What do you think happens then in Italy? The whole country will go nuts, you know. I mean, here we're talking about Benevento against Cagliari, and we have a heated discussion, and obviously a very heated president of Benevento. But now imagine that happens now in a half an hour from now in the game Juventus against Milan, and the Champions League will be decided because of a call like that. So I think, you know, the referee, he did the right thing. You know, he got the message from the VAR. He went there, he looked at it again, and then in his opinion, he thought it's not a penalty. So he made that decision, and I think it's right if he does that. He sticks to it, and it's a human being, and all of us will make mistakes, or, you know, or hope that we didn't make the mistake, you know. But we all know that championships were decided that way in the past in Italy. I lost a championship, I think, in 91 because of a similar decision like that. And you have a feeling that you have an empty stomach. You have a feeling that you were robbed of something. And so I totally get the emotions that being part of that. So hopefully we don't have that similar situation just now in the upcoming game.
Meanwhile, Jose Mourinho is the new coach of Roma. What a media storm it caused in Italy. He was everywhere. Front pages, as well as the sports newspapers as well. Shaka's old teammate, though, Paolo Di Canio, isn't that excited by it. This is a leaked WhatsApp message. Oh, we love a leaked WhatsApp message. I understand you need a big name at this moment, but it's like when you sign a player who is finished. Mourinho's had his third sacking in 4 years, kicked out from everywhere due to the incompatibility of his character. And before, that's all he was good at, having character. He's finished in every conceivable way. He doesn't even play football. He plays anti-football. You might enjoy yourselves in a few press conferences because controversy makes for good theatre. But let me tell you, to reconstruct a team, he's the worst you could possibly get. Nikki, is that the view shared by many in Italy?
Well, I think it's worth pointing out here that Paolo Di Canio is beloved as a Lazio legend. So he's someone who has a certain affiliation which might influence some of what he's saying. I don't entirely disagree with him. There's plenty about this move that worries me. I said it on the Serie Awesome podcast this week. I think it's going to be a disaster because Mourinho, who is a very combustible character, is walking into one of the most combustible settings in all of Italian football, and a club that I can't imagine is going to open its checkbook in a huge way to transform a squad that has lots of holes in it right now. It's got a core of very interesting young players, really exciting young players, actually, but it has no obvious successor to Edin Dzeko up front, and it has lots of holes to plug all over the team and some really big wages on players like Javier Pastore who aren't contributing. So it's a tricky situation he's walking into, and I share a lot of Di Canio's reservations, but I think it's always worth remembering, first of all, it's a private message in a private group, but secondly, where the message is coming from.
Gab, is this going to be a success?
Well, first of all, I just got to say, because obviously I've known Paolo for 25 years. I wrote his book more than 20 years ago. So I just want to reiterate what Nicky said.
Are there any copies left, Gab? Or they all sold out? That's what we need to know.
It's a long time ago. I'm sure you can find some if you look carefully. But this is a private message where he's trolling a friend of his who's a Roma fan. Secondly, everything Paolo said in that message is no different than what he says, maybe with slightly different tones, on television where he works as a pundit. It reflects what... Well, Nick, he says, I think in many ways it reflects what I believe too. Like, he's left his last three clubs. last four clubs, actually, including Real Madrid, he's left there burning bridges. And, you know, Roma is a completely different challenge, and he's going to have to exhibit a skill set to make Roma work that we haven't seen from him in a very, very long time. You assume the Friedkins know what they're doing and whatever, but those who expect him to go in and you know, and get the Mourinho that we saw at Chelsea the first time around, or at Porto, or at Inter when they won the treble, you're not getting that guy. You're getting a different guy. You're getting most likely the Mourinho of the last couple of years, and he's going to have to work with a much more limited budget in a city that loves eating up and spitting out managers like no other in the world. So, yeah, so good luck. It does not seem to be. It's a very, very counterintuitive choice, to say the least.
Meanwhile, Gab, I've got to ask you about the statement that was put out jointly between Barcelona, Real Madrid and Juventus yesterday, basically crying at the fact that everyone's been very mean to them since they suggested that a Super League was a good idea and the Super League is still going to go ahead. Why do they continue to bang their head on this wall, considering that there are only three teams who are left in this Super? You can't have a three-team Super League. Is it a legal thing, Gab? If they come out and say that, no, it's disbanded, they won't be able to get money or fines from the other clubs? What's going on?
So there's different elements. I mean, technically, the tournament's not going to go ahead now because there was a minimum. You need to have a minimum of four teams in it. That's what the bylaw said. And once AC Milan bowed out, they're down to three. Obviously, they're sticking to their guns. They don't want UEFA to take disciplinary proceedings against them that could result in a one-year ban. They're watching the space because the Champions League final is coming up. The big rumor is that UEFA are going to make an announcement before that. I got to say, the people I've spoken to suggest those teams may be correct. It could be really, really difficult for UEFA to actually ban them. So I think it's like a waiting game. And I think perhaps they're not happy. I genuinely don't know this, but I think what we will find out very shortly is if UEFA went and offered them the same deal that they offered the other nine clubs, which is, you know, kind of a very light punishment, an admission of guilt and a recommitment to staying kind of within the system. If UEFA offered them that deal and they turned it down, then I think they have to own it and come out. And then you really have to wonder how responsible are they being at this stage. If UEFA didn't offer them the deal and said, we were always going to punish these clubs more harshly, then I think they may have a point. They may be holding out for a deal like that. I genuinely don't know, because at this point it seems nonsensical. What you said before about the penalties, the $150 million that each club that quits the Super League would have to pay to the remaining Super League clubs, there is truth to that. The problem is, do they want to go and tie themselves up into 10 years of litigation to pursue fellow football clubs, clubs that they will have to work with in the future, you know, to go and pursue these clubs for these funds? I don't think so. I don't think that would be a wise choice. I don't think it would be a worthwhile choice.
Jagger, how is your end of the desk so tidy? I'm like a complete mess.
It speaks to who you and I are. That's all I have to see. All you need to know.
Stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets, which I think is this piece of paper out of all these papers that are here. Look at you.
My papers are arranged, Dan.
You don't even look at your papers, that's why. Jules and Stevie with us as well. Stevie, let's start with you. Did Guardiola make the right decision to rest some big guns against Chelsea, or would a psychological advantage of the win would have helped more?
No, I think he did the right thing, to be honest. Nine changes and he still should have won the game. That's the honest truth. Aguero missing the penalty is a disaster. And again, another horrendous VAR decision, not giving Sterling a penalty that would have put them 2-1 up. The fact is, the team that's going to play Chelsea in the Champions League final will be nothing like the last two Man City teams that Chelsea have played. So, no, I don't think there'll be a psychological advantage to Chelsea at all. We all know City are a better side. Chelsea know City are a better side. And I think that's how it'll pan out.
Steve, what did you make of the Sterling the decision early on with that tackle? I haven't spoken to you about this.
Oh, I kind of go back and forward. You know, I'm stuck right in the middle. I could see how he would be sent off. At the same time, I don't think there was any real malice in it. So I'm really stuck, Dan. I don't think there's a correct answer, to be honest.
Shaka, as a goalkeeper, did you ever prepare, even in the slightest bit, no, it's more, for a possible Panenka when facing a penalty kick?
Nah, you don't think. Not many players have that in their locker.
Right, so that's not even a consideration?
Not particularly.
What if it was a Ramos-type player who you know had a bit of a history?
Well, if there's a player who has that history, then yes.
Right.
You leave your movement till the very last second just in case.
How much did that Mendy save make you smile?
Oh, that was so good. That was so good.
I thought it might.
That made every chip that every idiot tried and traded worthwhile seeing that happen. You know what he should have done? Just booted it over the stand.
Yes.
Just caught it and booted it over the
stand.
Is
that what you do in training?
Anybody tries to chip it, Panenka otherwise,
yes.
and as a keeper you catch it,
yeah.
you just turn around and kick it as far away as you possibly can.
Just
long
end
training ground. That's what Mendy should have done.
Do you know, Jules strikes me as someone who maybe likes Sir Panenka.
That
sort of arrogant.
He's a senior Ramos kind of player.
Take a sandwich for Jules. I'll have a Panenka and a Coke, please.
Coach and Stevie. Jules, in your playing days, bit of Panenka?
So, when I was playing, the Panenka was not as popular, I would say. Not many players used to do it like they do now. Like, you see a lot of them. Depay, as you said, Sergio Ramos. We saw Aguero. We saw even Zidane in a World Cup final. But back in late 90s, early 2000, I don't think it was as common as it is now, sometimes, to be fair. So, I never did one. And I can't remember even having played with someone or against someone who at my low, my low level.
I suppose under 10s, it didn't quite play out as much.
Look at you, the keeper doesn't dive as much. You are terrible playing under 10s.
Stevie, if a player did, when you were coaching, took a Panenka, would you mind? Would you say, don't do that again? What are you doing? Would you get involved at all?
Oh, I'll tell you, I've got Pepe Kinsella. We're playing Columbus Crew at home. We got a penalty. Pepe Kinsella was a penalty taker. So he takes the first penalty and he scores, puts it in the bottom corner. 10 minutes later, we get another penalty. Pepe Kinsella steps up, and of course all the lads are shouting, somebody else take it, he's ready to take one. I'm like, no, he's a penalty taker, let him go, let him take it.
Right.
Anyway, he tried a Panenka and the goalie just stood there and waited for it. And eventually it came to him and he just picked it up and he shook his head. I'm sure he wanted to boot it, but he didn't. What can you say? You know, you've got to back your penalty taker, whichever one he tries. And if it doesn't come off, then you can't go chastising them.
That's it. Stevie, what's that new trophy over your right shoulder? I haven't seen that one before. Yeah.
That?
Yeah, what's that one?
That is... MLS Coach of the Year.
He didn't have a clue, did he?
You're bragging now.
Is that when you won
you're
MLS
bragging.
Cup?
Good job I'm not in the studio. I'd be taking Seb's place in the telephone box and I wouldn't be doing this. You'd be getting that.
How did you get Coach of the Year if you don't win MLS Cup, Stevie?
Well, I don't know whether you're trying to be clever or you're trying to be serious now. Which one is it?
What an idiot. All right, Jules.
Well, I'll give you a clue.
Yeah.
I'll give you a clue.
Yes.
The trophy's handed out the night before the final.
Aye, that's convenient.
So if you take a team from last to the final, then you've done a very good job and you get a little trophy like that one.
There you go, lovely trophy, Stevie. Stevie, this is for you. How confident are you that Liverpool will be back challenging for the title next season, given how much time the key players have spent out injured?
Well, Up until West Ham got beat today, I was very confident because I didn't think Liverpool were going to get into the Champions League and maybe not in Europe at all. But, unfortunately, West Ham losing today kind of opens the door to Liverpool a little bit. Because if they beat United, they've got three winnable games left. Burnley, West Brom away, and they got Palace at home last day of the season. So that would knock the Premier League chances a little bit if they get into the Champions League or Europe. But I'm pretty confident. Once they get everybody back, they'll be back to somewhat what we think they should be, put it that way, which means that they will be contending, no question.
Jules, what positions does Dortmund most need to strengthen in the summer? Who would you sign?
They need centre-backs. That's what they need. I mean, I like Akanji and Mats Hummels is obviously a very good... Well, used to be a very good defender, but it's been too easy to score goals against them for most of the season, especially on set pieces. So they need a very commanding centre-back. They clearly missed out already on Upamecano and Konate, who going to Bayern Munich and Liverpool, of course. And I think go and get Tapsoba, Bayer Leverkusen, if you want to stay in Germany and get what's the best of what you can get in Germany. But I think they need an upgrade at centre-back because really that's where I think they've been struggling the most this season.
Were you hey, Jules, is that a done deal? Konate.
Which one?
Is that a done deal, Jules? To Liverpool?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah, Stevie, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. They just have to pay the release clause and then I think they have an agreement with him and with his agent for him to come over. And I think this one will definitely happen this summer, without a doubt.
Good signing, then.
Xhaka, were you ever on a team and wonder why certain players keep playing constantly when you and your teammates know they aren't good enough at this level?
Ooh. No, not that I can recall.
Did you have people who were like teacher's pet? Like you feel the coach gave more leeway to, so if they had a bad game, they'd be let off more than others?
Apart from you.
You see? Jules, I was defending you when Dad was telling you how you played 10th grade football. I was coming to you now. Not that I can recall, Dan.
No.
I don't. Everybody has a role to play. I just... No, I...
Stevie, did you ever think, why is this person playing? No, he played.
No, Dan. In the real world of professional football, those things don't happen. Maybe an under-12 school team.
Yeah.
But not in professional football, no.
Xhaka, defenders like Van Dijk have a chance at the biggest awards in football. Would that ever be a reality for goalkeepers?
No.
Rightly so, yeah.
We are team players, we are.
Really?
We're more concerned with...
You were turned down individual awards.
That's right.
So why did you embrace Hammer of the Year when you were awarded it?
Huh? It was a team. Everybody team came in with me.
Really?
Yeah.
So when you took the award, you said this is...
That this is on behalf of everybody out there.
This is for all of the Hammers. Yeah. Let's end with this. It's a good question. Ready? If you can go back in time to play a football match again, which one would it be? So where did your mindset take you here?
The easy answer is FA Cup final against Liverpool.
Right.
But I think if I could only replay one game, it would be Newcastle 95-96 season away to Blackburn. I think it was maybe the third to last game of the season. We were leading 1-0 and of course quarter I should have done better with.
Right.
If I could choose one game, that
you're going back to make amends as opposed to go back and enjoy the experience again.
Yeah.
So, for example, you wouldn't go back to 2006 World Cup and relive that. You'd want to go back and rectify.
Yeah.
So then that takes me to Stevie. And are we going 1989 or are we going Wimbledon FA Cup final or are we going somewhere else?
Actually, it's a choice between 89... and 86 at the World Cup against Uruguay. We'd have been the first and only Scotland team ever to get through the group stages. So, I mean, I'm probably going to have to go 89, but the Scotland one's a close second.
So let's focus on both of those. Like, so the 89, Stevie, what would you personally have done differently? Or could you have done anything different?
No, just replaying the whole game.
Right.
Yeah, just replaying the whole game. Things happened in the game that you couldn't really turn around and pin it on. You know, you couldn't pin it on somebody like slipping and falling and putting somebody through something. You know, something straightforward. Right.
You would just kick Michael Thomas early.
I would just No, not even. The kicking him was never an option. He was too far away. The ball had ricocheted off him and had gotten too far away. And it happens too quickly. It's all right. It's all right sitting watching the telly and saying, oh, why didn't you do this and do that? But
right.
the truth is that things happen just to the snap of your fingers. So, just to play the game again because... We didn't play well. Mind you, we couldn't have. It was a fourth game in about 9 days or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
Including a cup final in the middle of it that went to extra time. So we had no energy, no juice in the legs at all. So, yeah, I'd replay that one.
What about the Uruguay game, Steve? Is that when you had like half a chance?
Yeah, and again, not particularly for that reason, but... I'm still kind of torn because what happened in the game was Uruguay had a man sent off after 5 minutes. So clearly it's 11-10. But the referee, from then on, let them away with absolute murder, pretty much. I mean, I think there was a free kick nearly every 2 minutes of the game, there was a free kick. And 99% of them were against Uruguay. But the referee wasn't... Because the referee had sent one of their players off, he didn't book people and he didn't... I mean, Gordon Strachan got tackled round the waist about 20 minutes after the red card. He got kicked round his midriff and the referee just gave a foul. It was another red card. So, as I said, every 2 minutes there was a free kick and we just couldn't get going. We didn't really create any chances. I did have a chance. And the chance only came because I made a good run inside the fullback, didn't see me. But I didn't connect with the shot properly and that gave the goalkeeper time to get across and save it.
Right.
So obviously I would love that chance again, but just for the whole thing, I can't decide whether it was because we played badly or whether we just weren't allowed to, because the referee was hopeless after that and they, as I said, just went round kicking, pulling, spitting. Bunching, you name it, just a dirty bunch of hooligans, to be honest.
Oh. Just to take the point that I made with Shaka, Steve, what about going back and playing a game that you just had so much fulfilment, so much enjoyment from? Like, so we're talking about very much the lows, what about the highs, like the kind of peak?
Oh, too many times.
Really?
I mean, I'm so lucky, man.
Yeah.
I'm so lucky. European Cup final, 84. Winning the double at Wembley. You know, things like, little things like, we played Leicester, I think it was 80, yeah, it was 86, the year we won a double. We played Leicester, second last game of the season, something like that. And with about 10 minutes to go, our whole end just went absolutely crazy. So we knew that something had happened because Everton were playing at the same time as us.
Right.
So we knew instantly that either they were getting beat or whoever they were playing had equalised, whatever it may be. And so it was actually hard. The last 10 minutes of that game was hard to concentrate because you've got this thing going around your head that we were 1-0 up at the time, so you're thinking, right, we just don't give anything away. And I certainly know I was I kind of lost my concentration a bit. I mean, we ended up winning the game 1-0, but just the tingle that goes through your body when you hear that roar and then you realise what it's for, absolutely amazing. So,
I bet.
Yeah, there was too many, Dan.
Right.
I'm lucky.
You know, to that point, I don't think goalkeepers feel that way in playing games. Like, as a striker, you can imagine, you know, you're having a good game, you've scored three, you want this game to go on for the next 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
You know, you just enjoying it that much. As a goalkeeper, even when you're having a good game, I think it's always in the back of your mind that you're judged and remembered for your mistakes.
Sure.
So even when you're having a great game, the thing that's in the back of your mind most is, I'm ready for the referee to blow this off now, right, before...
Just survival, yeah.
Right. And then we can go back and say, wow, that was such a good game. But we don't want the game... We want the game to finish shorter. You know, we have a very different opinion when we're in the middle of it. We enjoy games after it's done. And right, you can sit back and look back on it. But you never have that same sense of fulfillment during the 90 minutes.
Is that why you don't get individual awards?
Well, because we're team players.
Yes, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Did Stevie want to say something?
Do you know, Dan? Yeah, if there was one thing I would love to be able to change, I would love to have been able to enjoy all the victories and really be able to soak it all in after the final whistle had blown. Yeah. Because I never did. I never really did. A, because of the way I am, and B, because at Liverpool it was, well, all right, you've won, but guess what? You're going to have to do it again tomorrow. So you never quite fully were able to just see it for what it was until you get older and you're not playing anymore. Yeah. And then you realise and you kind of, you can really enjoy it. But I wish I could have enjoyed it more at the time.
Jules, at the end of a good Gab and Jules podcast, do you feel that you celebrate it enough?
I don't think I suck it up enough of what Gab just said for 80% of the time. Definitely not, no. Definitely not. And I wish, if I can change something, I would like to go back to the show in September 2018 where, you know, at the end, Gab spoke for 95% of the time, and I wanted to say something at the end, and I ran out of time. So. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, dear. It's been a steady percentage throughout. That's it. Thank you very much.
Just quickly, Dan.
Go on, Jules.
Just quickly on that point. I wonder if Zinedine Zidane, for example, ever thinks again about that World Cup final 06, which was his last ever game of football, and that red card and that Panenka that he scored against Gigi Buffon. And, you know, that question, I think, we can ask him that next time he's on the show.
Sure.
And I would be very fascinated by if he picks that moment.
Yeah. God, imagine how much nicer I'd be to Zidane than I am Stevie. Stevie has abused me for
it. He win that award for.
Hey, let's get Materazzi on and say, right, what's the best wind-up you've ever had?
That'd be a show for the ages. That's it. Good stuff, guys. Yeah. As always, thank you very much, ESPN FC. Back on your screens tomorrow. It is a busy week. So many huge matches. Be sure to join us throughout it.